All right. Hi, everybody. It's RCFB Talk 189. It's Tuesday night. This is when we like to talk to you. So if you'd like to join the conversation, you can just hit request from the Twitter app, the X app, however they call it, and we'll get you up here. We'll talk about whatever it is you'd like to talk to in college football. It's the offseason. It keeps on going. Lots of things to discuss. The transfer portal, the spring transfer portal, officially opened today. We also had some spring games of note over the past couple of weeks. We've got some more coming up this weekend. Some might argue we've had some of the biggest ones already, but there's always stuff going on. It's a fascinating time only because it'll be interesting to see who jumps in the portal. It's from what all accounts, it's been one of the busiest portal seasons ever. I know from, again, there's plenty of time for people to still jump in. It only just opened today, and some people were sort of early announcing that they were going to go in. And in the case of USC's Barry Alexander, he announced he was going to go in the portal, and then within a day said, you know what, I'm not, because clearly someone was able to secure the bag for him. By the way, one quick note on that. My colleague on another show I do, Advanced Media, Sean J. Raja, he pointed out that Barry Alexander staying at USC after they apparently secured the bag is the first time since middle school that he's ever been at the same school for 2 years in a row. That includes all of high school, all of college. That's an incredible statement, which also, I guess, says his raw talent, if you can just keep being great no matter where you go and whatever coaching regime. And, you know, the entire defensive coaching regime at USC is changing, so this is, I guess, another coaching staff anyway for him to see. But if there's anything you'd like to talk about, please go ahead and hit request. Let's see, a couple of the other sort of lighter topics. One I wanted to mention, kind of that might have got lost in the cracks, is I guess Feinbaum was quoted at saying Texas A&M as a university and the fan base feels quite betrayed by the SEC because they were promised Texas would never come in when they did all those years ago along with Missouri. So some of the responses to that were pretty amusing on RCFB, one of which suggested, well, Texas A&M could do the funniest thing in the next go-round of conference movement, and that people are imagining the idea of them deciding they're more of a Big Ten school. But, of course, Nebraska fans probably would not be a fan of trying to let in Texas A&M, particularly after Trev Alberts, their previously beloved son, decided to ditch them to go over there. Let's see here. Oh, hey, Hob Buggins, what's going on? We'll let you up here. To get up here, just go ahead and hit the unmute button. Love to hear from you. Hey, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good.
Hey, I was just curious because me and my buddy over here in West Virginia, we were talking SEC football the other day, and we were talking about Ole Miss because, like, we enjoyed watching Lane Kiffin's offense and stuff like that. And we were just wondering, like, do Ole Miss and SEC fans, will they find it, like, objectively a failure if they don't win their side of the SEC this year with no more Nick Saban? Texas A&M's got a new coach. I know Brian Kelly's down there at LSU, but is this the year Ole Miss has to – they got to play for the SEC championship, right?
Well, it's an interesting kind of situation, right? Because with the 12-team playoff, I'm not sure how they're going to quantify success. And let's be clear, the SEC's, because they're going to have so many teams, they've dropped divisions. So you just got to finish in the top two spots. In a way – it makes the SEC title game, you know, more attractive because you're not getting stuck with, you know, Georgia facing some team in the other side. It's sort of the same thing that we saw happen, of course, in the Big Ten as well, where you get Ohio State versus, you know, whatever team has been kind of stacked up in the other division. But all of that said, this is now prime for, at the very least, Ole Miss. I think not making the playoff would be a disappointment, because we presume at least three teams from the SEC will probably make it in. I mean, probably more potentially. But Big Ten and SEC seem prime for that. And now it seems like the two teams that are always just left out of the dance, you know, so to speak, are Ole Miss and Penn State. So it kind of seems like this is their era. Now,
one of the long got to get through Morgantown first this year, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait for that game. And they had one of the most disappointing. I mean, let's talk about, you know, spring game a little bit. They both had their spring game this past weekend. Penn State's was disappointing only because we didn't get to see a whole lot. I mean, it made sense. It was kind of symbolized everything people don't really necessarily care. I mean, people like me are kind of like not really thrilled with most spring games because, you know, they didn't want to, you know, they had two great running backs, but why are you going to put your starting running backs in the spring game, is, you know, if they get injured? Andy Kotelnicki, they got a great, you know, offensive coordinator from Kansas, but he's not going to throw anything crazy in the spring game so that opponents can see him. So the only thing we even knew was that Keandre Lambert-Smith was not going to be there, and he's not. He went to the portal, unsurprisingly. And
is
Julian
that the
Fleming.
Receiver of theirs?
That was their number one receiver.
Yeah,
but then
the dude that cooked West Virginia last year. So if he wants to come on down to Morgantown and pay Penn State back this year, he's more than welcome to. Because that's our thing. Everybody, I saw a lot of Drew Allar is overrated, and he might be, but I tell you what, he torched West Virginia last year in that first game.
I can't wait to see that game because that's always a fun rivalry. I'll tell you that much. I think it's going to be exciting, but it'll be interesting to see because honestly, I don't know what to expect from Penn State. I mean, they got that Julian Fleming. He was a former five-star from Ohio State, but again, spring game was really windy. They only got one pass thrown to him, or at least one. He only caught one, I should say. So it's kind of a mystery. And then Ole Miss, I thought, went the funniest route. They just decided to have like a fan festival where there was no real football played. I mean, there was like 7-on-7 touch football. So, you know,
hey, Jackson Lane Kiffin is the best in the game at coach PR to school right now. It's even close, in my opinion.
And, you know, I got to give credit to John Talty over at CBS Sports because I was reading his analysis of it. And he said, like, you know, bringing up all the fun things they did, Monty Kiffin being pushed around in a golf cart. They had a tug of war. The fraternities and sororities had their own tug of war contest. I mean, the first time we even got a chance to take a look at that superstar they got from A&M, Walter Nolan, it was a tug of war competition. You know, Jackson Dart threw, you know, passes on that 7-on-7, and they had a slam dunk contest with the football players. Joey Chestnut visited and ate 20 hot dogs in 90 seconds. He competed against the football team. I think the best on the football players was seven hot dogs in that same. I mean, Chestnut kind of proved why he's there. But the kind of the more, you know, practical version of it, and I credit this, is, you know, Kiffin is the master of the portal, right? He knows that if I have my backups look really good at the spring game, like the weekend before the portal opens, there's going to be a lot more interest in my backups who I might be valuing. So, like, let's let all these teams try and evaluate my backups on a tug of war contest or a slam dunk contest and kind of see whether they'd be attractive to take or not. And, you know, we'll see if it works. But I mean, because that's the thing. They saw that with Texas last season. Their backup QB had a really good spring. And then, you know, they were very open with the fact that, you know, Steve Sarkisian was like, they had to repel offers that suddenly started coming his way because, you know, are you sure you want to back Quinn Ewers? Do you want to be a starter somewhere else? So, you know, a lot of this.
In regard to fielding, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, no, not at all.
In regard to fielding offers from other schools, one thing that I do find kind of annoying is people, like, fan bases all of a sudden want to. I know NIL is flawed and it has its issues, but, like, let's not pretend like this wasn't going on for decades. It's just over a phone booth or something like that. Like, they've always been trying to poach players. I understand there was rules and things like that, but, like, grad transfers and things like that, they've always had coaches and players text messages and DMs. It ain't nothing new.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it has been. I mean, one of the funnier kind of jokes I read in RCFB was talking about, because Caden Proctor, the whole saga with him, for those who aren't aware, you know.
Now, that's insane right there.
Yeah, because he was from Iowa. Iowa thought they had him, and he decides to go to Alabama, which is, you know, okay, we kind of get that. If you have a chance to play, you go. And he did play a fair amount down in Alabama, but, you know, Iowa kept a good relationship with him, which, again, is smart. You never want to slam a door shut. And so he decides to go there in January after the transfer, after Nick Saban leaves. And then now he's announced that, I mean, it's all finalized, I believe, at this point. Well, but he said, like, you know what? I'm going to go back to Alabama. And no one's entirely sure what happened there. You know, what? And people have joked, does that mean Iowa was tampering or Alabama was tampering? I mean, what did he kind of leave those guys? But my favorite response was from an Illinois fan, Lovey Beard. And I actually tweeted it right before the show began, and he said, like, you know, homeboy just went to Iowa long enough to see Caitlin Clark. I respect that.
I saw that too. That was hilarious.
Yeah, somebody else said, like, so hey, now you got the student price, gotta go see her. Now you can go back to Alabama and play some football. So,
much like everything, the NIL is eventually, I shouldn't say NIL, the transfer portal will eventually even itself out. I think because, at least from a West Virginia fan standpoint, since the Neil Brown era started, it started around the transfer portal did. And the thing is, like, all those guys, with the exception of Tyke Smith at Georgia, none of them really panned out where they went, and they didn't even end up starting. So the grass is not always greener on the other side.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I do like the way it's been put in some of I was listening to a conversation about the portal and how, you know, we focus on the top teams getting, you know, some of the really the best stars from some of the teams, especially at the G5. But it's not like the G5 isn't getting players as well. I mean, you know, I was trying to think, oh, gosh. There's a couple of players, a couple of examples of guys who were starting at FBS program, probably P5 programs, dropped down to a G5 and dropped down as relative. I know that.
Some
and
of then, those are WVU guys. I can
And then a couple of them have actually boosted back up. I'm trying to remember his name. There was a guy who was at Maryland. Ends up at Toledo, and then yeah, he just ended up moving right back up. So some players have kind of have taken full advantage of it, and of course, some of these portal gets are also really smart because we're looking at D2, FCS, you know, grabbing guys who were really promising. I mean, Mizzou really took the whole shebang with that last year. Obviously, when you have the leading rusher in the SEC is a former D2 guy that they found. I mean, you know, some of this stuff has opened up. So there is opportunities. It's just that I think a lot of the attention's for these biggest names. And there's some big names out there. I'm trying to think, like, some of the guys out there right now. Obviously, we talked about Caden Proctor.
Old dude from Colorado is transferring.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting Colorado moves. I mean, Cormani McClain is probably he's a cornerback who is highly recruited, although he kind of was an uneven first season, but there's a lot of potential with him. Also Damian Martinez, the running back for Oregon State, just a star over there. I know that crushes a lot of the Beavs fans. So we'll see.
I feel so bad for Oregon State fans. And who's the other one left out over there?
Wazoo.
Oh man. I mean, they'll end up getting in a conference, but that sucks. And
I feel bad for them because they got a gut punch when their AD also left to go to
Stanford being in the ACC. I understand all of conference realignment doesn't really make a lot of sense geographically right now, especially with the Pac-10 merging with the Big Ten. But seeing Stanford ACC in particular makes me feel uncomfortable, and I can't explain why.
Well, a Stanford-Louisville conference game is going to be a strange thing to see. I'm going to just say that. And that is coming up next season, so it'll be fun.
I think Chip Kelly, he nailed it to the teeth. I think every football program and all FBS football programs should essentially be independent and separated from all the school states. I know, in a way, in regard to scheduling, I guess, because I just don't understand why UCLA volleyball got to go play at Ohio State, but that's just another conversation, I guess.
Absolutely. Hey, Ski Mask Smurfy, you came up here as well. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, feel free to hit request. We always love talking to you. Again, this is RCFB Talk 189. I'm Bob Akayeri. We do these every Tuesday night. What's going on, Ski Mask?
Well, nothing much. Just another Tuesday night. And you guys left off that conversation. Sort of had a decent segue to what I wanted to talk about with conference realignment. Did you get a chance to see the article detailing what they actually had laid out for this Super League of college football?
I did, and I'm surprised how much play that article, I mean, all of that's getting. One of the guys at RCFB did a layout using the logos, and it looked really flashy. It did great on Twitter. I was actually kind of shocked at how well it did. I didn't do that one, but I just want to put some context here. So the Super League, for those who aren't familiar, there is a group of a mix of private equity, a mix of former guy, like one guy who was formerly from the NFL, some people who have been at one point or another connected with conferences. They were proposing creating basically a new league of the top, was it like 70, basically all the P5 teams that were there. Then plus kind of they would be in fixed conferences, fixed divisions of 10 teams. And then an eighth group of teams that are from the traditional G5. And then that 10 team group would then be subject to promotion and relegation from the rest of G5. Now, some of the reporting that's come out since, because it was interesting, the Athletic was the one that really first dropped that story because they had gotten a great writer from the Sports Business Daily and Stuart Mandel teamed up. But then as it came out, there were other reporters, like, for example, Ross Dellinger, who I respect a lot at Yahoo Sports. He was like, no, we all knew this was happening. In fact, somebody had reported upon it like a month or two earlier, and just it kind of nothing happened with it. But he said, like, the reason this story was kind of, a lot of people weren't paying attention to it, is it explains some of the stuff that was going on. Like, there was this weird statement that came from Bill Hancock, the executive director of the College Football Playoff, who's leaving at the end of this season. He said, like, hey, you know, we really need to get this new media deal done ASAP. And then, you know, it was. The new CFP media deal was done in mid-March. And apparently the reason was they kind of knew this thing was existing in the background, this Super League. So as soon as they signed the media deal, that basically slammed the door shut on it. Now, it's important because it could be a backup, maybe not this exact version, but it got the discussion of what a Super League would look like. And the only reason why I also want to put some context for those who haven't been paying attention, there are a couple of lawsuits out there involving the NCAA, specifically the House lawsuit, which is essentially like a back pay lawsuit for basically a lot of players who were not able to take advantage of NIL, and saying that because of the NIL's, pardon me, the NCAA's illegal operation, which was in violation of laws, the Supreme Court kind of put them in an awkward position, and now they've been doing all this stuff. That would cost the NCAA and conferences potentially billions and billions of dollars. And if that happens, then suddenly you're going to have the NCAA meltdown. What do you do in its place? If that sort of a scenario were to occur, then it might not be the Super League, but that might be, at the very least, the closest we have to a working model of what might replace it.
If that scenario occurs, let Nick Saban be the dictator of college football.
So, Schema, sorry to interrupt. Sorry to put all of that out down there. Like, I wanted to just put some background in all of this. But, I did see it.
For people listening, to let them get some context of everything that's going on now. Somewhat ridiculous it is.
Yeah, it's wild. It used to be that college football in the spring, you just didn't really pay attention. Maybe you'd hear about your spring game and which freshman looked great. But now it's like every week there is some crazy story that could, you know, I mean, and it's weird. I don't like making it sound, you know, over the top, but the stuff could eventually turn over the top, and it's way more substantial than it has been in previous years. I thought last offseason was exciting because all the states suddenly got into this arms race over NIL laws to try and loosen them up to benefit their own state universities, which, as I said back then, this is going to potentially force the employment thing, because eventually a judge is going to say, like, these new loose NIL rules, you basically have an employee here, you're just not calling them that. And that's the other thing, that step's probably also going to come in the next year or two. I've heard up to 5 years, but that's generous. I think we're going to probably get a court. I know that, for example, this week, there's a separate NLRB case going on. This one's the one involving USC and I believe the California schools, which could probably turn out like the Dartmouth case, at least initially, where they're going to say that some of the athletes, I believe this includes not just football, but volleyball and a couple of the other sports, would also theoretically be allowed to have a right to unionize. And whether they do or not is another question, but the problem is that does eventually push out this concept that they are, in effect, employees. And that's also going to be another factor where, you know, if there is a situation where we have a kind of a crisis moment for the NCAA where they have to say, like, okay, are we representing the non-revenue schools, the non-revenue sports, or are we representing the top handful of schools? Because there's over 1,000 schools in the NCAA, let's be clear about that. But are we representing, you know, only the very, very top programs? And if that creates a separation, then that Super League also becomes maybe not the one people pick, because a Super League, to be honest, Super League has no buy-in from the Big Ten or SEC, no buy-in from the TV network. So it's kind of, if you know anything about the sport right now, you need those groups in one way or the other. And what might be more likely is the SEC and the Big Ten and the networks kind of, you know, colludes the wrong word, but work together and come up with a solution should the entire thing, you know, implode.
Ohio State and the NAIA is going to be insane. I can't wait.
They're going to crush Kansas Wesleyan.
That
is one school, for the record.
Yeah. That would be fun just to see them, all these schools go to NAIA. But yeah, I started looking at some of the newer details. One of the things that sort of struck me was that with the formation of the Super League within their plan, they sort of wanted to, like, kill off the transfer portal and also reduce scholarships? Because it says something like they're going to go from like 85 scholarships to 70 scholarships, but also every team needs to maintain at least 50 players on your team have to be guys you recruited out of high school. So I just thought that was interesting, sort of seems like some of these coaches probably put in the word saying they're sort of tired of having to re-recruit their kids.
Yeah, I don't know how practical it would be to get that through. Certainly the nice thing about coming up with a top-down kind of organization like that is you could theoretically create more limitations, but of course that means they're going to see everyone as employees and basically have some kind of collective bargaining agreement to come to that kind of conclusion that the players won't do that. That the players will be kind of restricted in some way. And that's what we lack in college football right now, which is why, you know, we have now the unlimited transfers. It sounds like the NCAA is just going to add some light. They've acceded to the court rulings that occurred in that Tennessee case. So it looks like the NCAA is just going to add some slight academic requirements to it. And therefore players will be allowed to transfer as many times as they need or want to. You know, that kind of brings up that interesting, like one of the other interesting kind of bouncing players is Penny Boone over at Louisville. He joined Louisville in January after two seasons with Toledo. He was the one whose name I was trying to remember because he was excellent at Toledo. He was just, you know, put up incredible numbers, was the MAC Offensive Player of the Year last season. But he'd started in Maryland, goes to Toledo, has this just incredible season, and then goes to Louisville. And by all accounts, the Louisville fans have been kind of, you know, talking about it. They said he was good, but again, Louisville last year, for example, had a tandem running back situation, and they were probably going to do something similar this season, and he just wanted to be the feature back. So it sounds like Penny Boone's in the transfer portal to find a team that's going to need him to be number one. Now, if there are some teams out there that are looking for that kind of back, I don't know. I mean, again, the hottest running back right now, at least the most desirable one for teams, is Damian Martinez, Oregon State. Just a great player. They were offering him an enormous amount to try and keep him. But, you know, and he didn't want to, I guess he decided not to stay after previously saying he would stay at Oregon State. You know, the story, I wanted to mention it because there were a couple of odd stories that have already come out of the transfer portal. And I just wanted to go over just a handful of them because one of them involves Pittsburgh. Deon Haynes. And I'm sure, again, this is one that'll delight our backyard brawl fan here. But he, again, he was their
shout out.
So he was one of their best players. He had the best NIL deal the school has apparently ever given anyone. But he's decided, you know what, I'm going to go into the transfer portal. But then he didn't just leave it there. He told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, I don't believe we can win now. He's talking about, like, if you want to just burn the boat, it says you leave Pitt. That is the way you do it. Not only is he leaving Pitt, he said, like, he does not believe the team can win, at least to the level he would like to win, as he kind of, I think it's going to be his final season. So, and there's a big, big, big desire for guys at his position. So he's going to enter that transfer portal and probably find a home and probably find a decent amount thrown at him to bring him home, to bring him to whatever program is going to take him. But that was pretty hard. You know, to be fair, Charlie Partridge was their defensive line coach. He was good at his job. He left to go to the NFL. So that's another thing, too. I'm not surprised that this happened, but man, it's one thing to think it. It's another thing to say it out loud. So that was kind of a burn for Pitt. You know, another kind of interesting move in the transfer portal is this kind of, I don't know. So it's so funny. It's described as Florida A&M running back Rodney Hill has entered the transfer portal. He was not there for that long. In fact, I'm going to credit Florida State fan PMA Cobb, who, like, this is his, he wrote it out. Let's recap Rodney's last 4 months. He ended the 2023 season, the third most carries at Florida State, in line to possibly be the main backup in 2024 and possibly double the carries. And, you know, again, as he pointed out, who knows if we would have taken Roydell Williams had he stayed. So he ends up agreeing to an NIL deal with the Florida State Collective. After agreeing to the deal, he comes back to the Collective, asks for more money than Florida State had previously paid NFL-bound Trey Benson in 2023. So the Collective tells Rodney Hill no. He threatens to enter the portal. FSU tells him to go ahead and do it. So he enters the portal, commits to Florida A&M, but then, of course, A&M's head coach Willie Simmons leaves for Duke to be their running back coach. He decommits from Florida A&M, commits as a walk-on to Miami, but then shortly after decommits from Miami and goes back to Florida A&M, 3 months later, he's in the portal again. So this might be Rodney Hill's fourth team in 4 months if someone is looking for a running back. That's an incredible run there. That's one of those ones where, again, by the way, I just want to emphasize for folks who might be worried about the portal, some of the guys are probably going to end up being some of the best players. May not be the ones we're paying attention to. Some of the really big stars already kind of made their moves by all accounts from the Miami spring game. Cam Ward looks as phenomenal as he probably was going to be. And Miami has stacked some good talent there. Xavier Restrepo is still catching passes. They got Isaiah Horton. They got Jacoby George. They got a lot of good guys over there on that team. So, who knows? Maybe their next running back will be Damian Martinez, probably because their own running back is in the portal and is looking to potentially return to Ole Miss. One of those other kind of funny moves there. You know, again, for those who also haven't been paying attention to timelines here, there are some major teams that are going to be looking in the portal other than Miami, namely Alabama and Washington, and to a lesser extent, Michigan, because those were three teams that lost their head coach kind of after that first transfer portal was done. So they've got a lot of those teams have room because they had a few departures, especially Alabama and Washington got a lot of departures after those head coaches left. So they're going to be able to take their pick. Alabama is the most fascinating because I don't think there's going to be a huge drop off there. It was interesting to hear how things went at the A game. They didn't show a ton, but they show that their running game is going to be absolutely dominant this season. Jalen Milroe, you know, he obviously is the prime. He's expected to be the starter. I think Quinn Ewers will be the Heisman favorite, at least going into the season. But Jalen Milroe, certainly, if he can keep up what he was doing towards the end of last season, will be up there. But Ty Simpson looked pretty good there at that practice. The big receiving core surprise. Well, I was surprised relative, but Jeremy Bernard, who transferred from Washington with Kalen DeBoer, apparently looked phenomenal as a wide receiver. But again, it looks like the real thing there. They've got some great running backs. Looks like it's going to be Jam Miller and Justice Haynes. Both of those guys looked exceptional. So it'll be really interesting to see how Kalen DeBoer's first season is going to shape up there. Looks like we have someone else who wants to come up here. TriStar going to let you up as well. Washington, we'll see who they pick out, only because it's Jed Fish. So that's not to say that's a problem, but I don't know what his plans are and how he's going to fill that out. I know that one of the other people that entered the portal was the one of the backups at Miami in the quarterback position, mostly because, again, not only do they have, and this is where I'm curious. I guess he's planning to stay. I haven't heard any indications that he's planning to leave. But when Cam Ward arrived, he arrived late in the game. I don't know if some of you paid attention, but really late in the game. Previously, they had recruited transfer quarterback Reese Poffenbarger. He was the star quarterback of Albany, and Albany went into the went almost all the way to actually went in the title game in the FCS. So I thought he was going to be the favorite. I'm pretty sure he transferred to Miami because he thought he was going to start. Then Cam Ward comes. And Cam Ward, you know, everyone thought, was he going to go to the NFL or is he going to come back? Is USC going to get him? Who's going to get him? And then I think because he waited so long, a lot of those other spots were filled. And then he ends up at Miami and Poffenbarger is like, well, you know, if he stays, I'll be impressed. But he's the other one I'd be thinking of. But, you know, the other quarterback, the backup behind him has decided to leave. So maybe it is just those two. You know, speaking of, and I'll get to TriStar 1 second. Since I mentioned the FCS title game, one of the funnier is relative. Looks like they decided they want to be more like the FBS. So the FCS title game is also going to move to a Monday. The reason this one seems to fit only in the schedule is because with the new 12-team playoff, the playoff schedule is going to extend further into January. So that'll free up what had probably been a Monday that the title game had been played on. is now going to be the FCS spot. So we're going to have an FCS title game on a Monday too. Not great. Not fun. Especially, you know, for all those fans driving to Frisco, that'll be annoying that they can't just necessarily get right back. You know, TriStar, what's up? You've been super patient.
Oh, there we go. What's going on tonight, ladies and gentlemen?
How are you?
Well, currently I'm down here in Laredo, Texas.
How you liking it?
I'll say this. If you don't at least know a little bit of at least Spanglish, you won't be able to get around here.
So how you feeling about the Vols after the spring game? Did you get a chance to catch any of it?
I was able to catch some of it, see, because, you know, I didn't get to watch a lot of it because I was driving. But, you know, as a man who does cover University of Tennessee, I had people up there that did watch it live and watched them warm up and everything. And pretty much everyone was about as advertised. Mike Matthews, I could legit see him getting starting reps. I think Mike Matthews is that good.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I've heard the same thing from all the write-ups on it. Everyone said that as a freshman, he looked great. Yeah. Braswell looked well, but Mike Matthews just looks like a real positive. And having Nico throwing to him, that's going to be dangerous.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's two teams to watch this year. Obviously, I'm a little biased of Tennessee. Another one I've been telling everybody to keep their eye on and don't sleep on. They've actually got a very favorable schedule, if you think about it, and that's Nebraska.
Oh, yeah. No, their schedule is favorable. I absolutely agree with you.
I had the only guaranteed loss on their schedule was at Ohio State, but after what I've been seeing out of Ohio State, I even question that.
Well, I would say this. Ohio State's defense is great, so I don't think we're going to see much of it. They returned so many of those guys. I mean, they got JTT. They got, you know, some of these guys people thought were heading in the NFL are going to go there. So I would caution a little bit on reading their spring game. But I agree. Like, UTEP, Colorado, I honest to gosh don't know what's going to happen there. But with UTEP, Colorado, Northern Iowa, Illinois, Purdue, Rutgers, Indiana – going into Ohio State, there's a strong chance that
they have a... And all of a sudden, you're like, dang, where did Nebraska come from? And I've been telling everybody, listen, they haven't really went away. They're just kind of like with Tennessee because they both fell off the same year in 2001. They just didn't have the right coach.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would fit... Yeah, that would fit the Matt Rhule kind of rebuild that he did at Temple and at Baylor.
And then maybe, you know, after... You know, Greg Sankey and what's the name of the Big Ten?
Tony Petitti.
Maybe after Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey get off their high horse and realize the damage that they're doing to the sport, maybe we can get back to how it should be, you know? Like even Josh Pate said it, you know, maybe we can get the old Big Eight back. Maybe we can get the old Southwest Conference back. I mean, I've been pushing that for a long time, and it's actually been gaining some traction, and I've even – talk to people high up at Tennessee, and that's why I understand is that most of the high ups of these universities don't like the direction that the sport is going. But the problem is that Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey are in so much with the TV networks that their word gets pretty much overruled, and there's nothing really they can do.
So I just have to ask you, so what game has you the most excited early on for Tennessee? Is it the NC State game?
I mean, that I've told Tennessee fans to not overlook NC State. Dave Doran's a great coach, and, I mean, he'll have those boys ready. They play tough. They play hard. They play physical. Honestly, the game I'm kind of looking forward to is our first – I'm sorry, I will never consider Oklahoma SEC. I always consider them Big Eight. But at Oklahoma, because that is Josh Heupel's return to Norman since that whole little falling out. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's a top 10 matchup. And they're going to mention a lot about that 2000 Oklahoma team. You're probably going to see them honoring that 2000 Oklahoma team somehow. I could see them awarding something to Heupel because he was so instrumental in that 2000 national championship team. I'm looking forward to that. I mean, I'm very convinced that Tennessee could make a playoff run. You know, looking at the only game I don't really see us actually winning just until I see us do it is at Georgia. Because I think Georgia right now, they're the team in the SEC until proven otherwise. Alabama I honestly, they're a huge question mark to me. I could see them going 7-5, 8-4. I could see them going 10-2, 11-1. I don't know.
I agree with you 100% on Alabama. It's so unpredictable, but they're going to Knoxville, which is great. So
yeah. They got to come to Neyland. Florida, my God, what was that? Looks like Ole Miss decided just to not care about it. At LSU, I think their defense is still going to be kind of an two teams I will never consider SEC, Mizzou and Texas A&M. Missouri, I mean, they should have a good season. Texas A&M's a question mark. Again, maybe if the old Southwest Conference was around, they'd be competitive. But, you know, South Carolina, I don't expect much. Kentucky, don't know.
Yeah.
So I think you're taught, and there's actually a legitimate scenario, and they've never, I don't understand why nobody's brought this up. There's actually a scenario where you could have three undefeated SEC teams.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. The scheduling is so weird now because you look at, they're not playing.
You could literally have Texas, Tennessee, and LSU all go undefeated because none of them play the other. And in that case, what do you do for the SEC championship?
Well, it's kind of, you know, when you say that, it builds almost into a statement I started reading. And
2008 Big 12 South energy.
Well, I was about to say, because the 12-team playoff kind of renders it a little moot in the sense that,
and by the way, back a few months ago, I was in Lubbock, and they're still mad about that.
Oh, man. Yeah, but I was going to say, though, I mean, the nice thing about the 12-team playoff is all three of those guys end up undefeated, you know, and two end up in the SEC title game. That third team is 100% in the playoff. In fact, all three are almost certainly in the playoff.
Oh,
so,
yeah. All three of them are guaranteed to be in the playoff. But I'm just saying, see, all these trying to go to super conferences is going to create.
Yeah, there's going to be potentially weird scenarios.
I don't expect those West Coast teams to do much just off the travel, because a lot of people don't understand how much of a toll that takes on you. And honestly, just because I think they're being greedy, I hope they fall and crash and burn miserably. Because that to me, as someone who has families played D1 athletics at the university, knows what goes on the inside when it comes to the coach at the university and everything, I hate it for these players. I really do. And not just for football. I'm talking like softball, soccer team, like all the other sports that, you know, it seems like don't really get any press coverage. That's who this is all going to be affecting. And I just hope maybe, you know, the powers that be finally get their head out of their, you know, their rear ends and fix all this. And maybe we go back to how it was a long time ago when it, you know, it actually worked and it mattered. You know, championships.
Hey, bowl games. Hey, I'll vote for you for president for that, man. I respect it.
Go on my Twitter page and you'll see it. I made the Southwest Conference. I made it 10 teams. Instead of adding Rice, I added UTSA, and also I added Memphis.
Your magical powers also put a conference of West Virginia, Virginia Tech, Pitt, Penn State, Boston College, Louisville, Syracuse all back together, because that would be sick.
Well, actually, I got a little – just imagine that basketball conference.
Oh, yeah.
Louisville and Indiana is a conference game in basketball? Oh, God.
Hey, Ski Mask Murphy, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I just decided to comment. I thought it in my head, then I had to read through their old rule book to just verify when – TriStar brought up that you could possibly have three undefeated SEC teams this year. And basically, if like all the little like weird mathematical tiebreakers don't work out, literally it would be decided by a coin flip to see who would play in the SEC championship. If all three teams who don't play one another all win all of their games, they would flip coins to see who plays against one another. And that third team would probably... You would want to be the team who loses the coin flip because you're guaranteed to be in the playoff.
Oh man, so it's like who beats up Vanderbilt the hardest?
And that was impossible.
That's pretty good right there.
If you guys go look at the schedules for Texas, Tennessee, and LSU, none of those teams play each other. and they have very manageable schedules.
Yeah.
And there's actually a scenario where all three of those teams. Now, do I think they're all three going to go undefeated? No. But there is a scenario. And, you know, if they would just go off my model, you'd have seven power conferences. And for all the people that are just, you know, hell bent on having a playoff, you know, you can do an 18 playoff with your seven conference champions. And then you have the highest rated group of five conference, like the highest rated team, you know, out of the Sun Belt or Conference USA or whatever. And they can do like a playing game or something. Who could be that group of five team?
There Marshall in the playoff is going to be insane.
Well, actually, if you go look at my Big East, I've actually got Marshall, West Virginia, Pitt, Penn State, Temple, Rutgers.
Sign me up. Put Virginia Tech in there.
No, I got Virginia Tech and ACC.
We got to play them Hokies, man. We got to bust that ass.
Well, I mean, well, actually, here's okay. So I'll go in order. So in my Big East, I got Marshall, West Virginia, Pitt, Penn State, East Carolina, James Madison, Liberty, and then also
East Carolina's a good one.
Well, we used to do some battles with East Carolina.
Well,
because I was debating on either them or another team for the ACC, and I wanted to go for the ACC one because I don't know why it would look right.
East Carolina's ruined West Virginia and Virginia Tech's years a few times.
And then you look at, obviously, like I said, Syracuse, UConn, and Boston College. So that's like 10 teams. And then the ACC is Maryland, where they should be, Virginia, Virginia Tech, Appalachian State. Tell me you don't want to see that. Duke, North Carolina, NC State, Wake Forest, Clemson, South Carolina, UCF, and Miami. 12 teams. There you go. Wham, bam,
Clemson bang, going to Boone would be sick. Dabo would be in hell, and I would sign me up for it.
And here's what sold me on App State. They have their own fan base. That's a beautiful campus. If nobody's ever been to Boone, I highly suggest you go up 421 from Wake Forest University to Boone. It's a beautiful drive. It's a beautiful campus. You get to see North Wilkesboro Speedway on the way up there. And they have a huge fan base. They can easily upgrade that stadium to about 50,000. And when they played North Carolina a couple of years ago, when they had that, what was it, like 64 to 62 or like that, you know, like a
that was a shootout.
I was like, this just bad. I was like, this just looks right to me. And they got they have a natural rivalry with like Virginia Tech, with Clemson, Wake, and obviously all the North Carolina schools. And then obviously, you know, the original Big Eight, the original Southwest Conference, you know, minus Rice, because I'm sorry, Rice is swapped them out for UTSA and add Memphis, so that way Arkansas doesn't, you know, complain and moan and groan about being the one non-Texas school.
Yeah, so yeah, I agree. These are nice. I just think realistically, they're not. We're not going to probably see it unless, again, I mean, actually, I would say it's more realistic than that we might have a shakeup of the entire system if one of the lawsuits does succeed in destroying the NCAA, which one or two of them might.
I can tell you right now, as someone who has talked to Dondi Plowman personally, they do not want to leave the NCAA. They don't know where that rumor started. That was actually brought up.
Oh, no, it's not that people would leave it. It's that the House case, because, again, I'm talking about the House versus NCAA case. If it's successful,
the antitrust,
that would literally bankrupt the entity, and then they would have to start over, because that would be if I was them, that would be the best way to do it. You'd probably have to start something, which would, in a way, force a reset. But kind of going back to the fact that, again, the Big Ten and SEC do have a pretty strong pull right now, and the networks would probably work with them. Something that would be created probably would still be, I mean, because it's hard to get people to let go of what they have. And that's, I think, the hardest part of all of this.
And that's the thing. Josh Pate even brought it up. Like, what these conferences risk is alienating their core audience. Because I'm sure y'all hear it all the time. Being, you know,
that the college football ratings are higher than they've ever been?
Well, for the playoff, But I'm talking about, like, a lot of the fans, you know, wish they could bring those old rivalries back.
No, he's right. I'm with you on that. Like, being a West Virginia fan my whole life, the last 12 years, it's been cool seeing Oklahoma and Texas come to town. But Ames, Iowa is the closest. Cincinnati.
You are literally proving my point right now. I always use that as like my whole point of it. The backyard brawl, Pitt, West Virginia. Yeah, if you're in Dallas, Texas or Atlanta, you probably don't care about that game. But you go up into that part of the country, they absolutely care about that game. And that's one of my favorite rivalries because it's like mutual hatred.
I mean, it's the Super Bowl around here. I can personally confirm that.
And that's the thing. It, you know, bull crap what it's doing now. And they're risking running off, you know, your diehard fans that have been there, you know, going back generations. And yeah, the ratings. Yeah, cool. I mean, that NASCAR had at one point higher ratings than Major League Baseball. And you see where that's got them. They chase the money, and that's what I feel like they're doing right now. They're chasing the money. They're leaving their core audience by chasing money. When you add Oklahoma and Texas, nobody, I can tell you right now, nobody in the SEC, in SEC country, in the SEC fan bases will ever consider them an SEC team. Like, if you ask, like, say, an Alabama fan, a LSU fan, a Florida fan, a Georgia fan, Tennessee fan, oh, do you consider Missouri SEC? No. They'll never be considered SEC. They're like Big 8, Big 12 over there. They should be playing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate it, TriStar. I know you're very passionate about this, and especially the idea of kind of recreating some of these more traditional things. And I think, you know, again, the Super League was only an interesting example of how if we are stuck kind of in a situation where they have to rebuild from the ground up, that might be an option to kind of figure out a way to divide things up a little more sensibly if you can build it again from scratch in a way that isn't so kind of incrementally weird as it is now.
Like, I can tell you right now, you know, as someone who's in that old Big 8 area, like in Nebraska, even out in Denver, like, I hear from those fans, like, they have been fans, you know, for years, even young fans today that grew up in it. You know, like, the common thing I hear is that we had a good thing going until we added Texas, the Texas schools. And I'll ask them, I'll say, well, what is it that y'all want? They said, we just want the old Big 8 back. That's what, like, you did that. I mean, you would all of a sudden, the ratings would go through the roof for that.
Well, some areas they would. I think that's one of the things that was striking, and it came up in the last round of kind of conference realignment, was the shift in how they were valuing teams. It had nothing to do with your home market anymore. Because that was what happened when, you know, it was 10, 15 years ago, when the last round happened was, you're bringing in X market, you're bringing in Z market. Now it's become like, well, what kind of brand name national audience can you bring in?
I hate that because, yes, on a national level, yes. If you're talking about national
fan bases, I think that's the thing. I think college football is kind of going into a weird zone where it had been surprisingly provincial. Like, the SEC is obviously huge. I mean, SEC fans goes without saying. But, like, bringing in more of the neutral fans is kind of – and I'm not saying that's necessarily better for the sport, but I think that's – the chase is now trying to bring up as much. And quite frankly, you know, in the next 10 years when the – whatever the next set of
TV contracts
come up, we may find that the old model doesn't work only because these linear cable TVs – because we got a glimpse of that with the CFP's renegotiation. They still got more money. They still got, again, more money than they had previously, but it wasn't as much as they expected. There wasn't a bidding war. It was just ESPN being the only viable bidder. So it was kind of a sign that maybe things are plateauing in terms of demand for the product, not because of TV ratings, but because they, with the, you know, the cord cutting and the things that are affecting cable, they don't necessarily have the money to pay anymore. Well, you know, Ski Mask Smurfy, I see your hand up.
Go ahead.
I can sort of agree and disagree with some of TriStar's points, but it sort of all leads me to one thing I did want to bring up in terms of related to my Michigan Wolverines getting a sort of not sentence handed down today. For our violations.
I was hoping we'd touch on that.
Yeah, I feel like, and all this, I will go ahead and say this. Yeah, we're guilty of the recruiting violations. I'm cool with that, but I'm sort of like at the point where sort of like, well, everyone's sort of basically already served up their punishment, and this is happening 3 years after the fact because NCAA is just it's like a group of 80s and chancellors who's like, they have to make time outside of like their school year schedules to like meet sporadically and rarely, that some things don't get handled till like a while later. So I feel like we're at the point that we may need to go what people are begging for with the whole, hey, each sport in the NCAA just needs a commissioner or like a small board, and that's all they do is just handle that sport. So like some of these things get handled a lot quicker. Then also,
well, we saw, it's kind of funny though, we did get a glimpse of that with the Connor Stallion stuff where the Big Ten tried to do that. And then it kind of turned into sort of an awkward like detente towards the end of okay, can you, where they kind of agreed to eventually just stop doing that to them.
Yeah.
But I agree. It is kind of fascinating. And you're right. It is. By the way, did you see Tom Mars, the attorney to the sports guys, their equivalent of the attorney to the stars, he's representing Harbaugh. Because again, yeah, you know, he was not, he kind of, he had a great quote there. Cause he's like, cause basically the rest of the coaches all accepted their punishment. Level 2 violations are just going to take it, you know, nothing serious, because this is, again, this is for the so-called cheeseburger case, which was not about a cheeseburger, but that's how it kind of got marketed. So it's not the Connor Stallion stuff. That'll come if we're lucky in a year or so. This is about something that happened during the coat.
That's just 5 years. When you said Connor Stallion's in a year, I feel like that's going to happen 5 years from now.
Yeah, I was trying to be generous with that one, with how fast it might move. But yeah, so the only thing is, there's one person who has not settled with them, and it's by all accounts Jim Harbaugh. So Tom Mars basically was a little annoyed that that the Michigan's decided to acknowledge that there was some head coach responsibility. You know, he said, quote, I saw from Ward Manuel's statement that Michigan changed its position for the purposes of, quote, moving forward, which doesn't surprise me considering Coach Harbaugh is no longer Michigan's coach. I can almost hear the wheels of the bus going womp, womp, like it's running him over. But sometimes that's the way things go in college sports. So
and that's why I feel, not just for college sports, for each college sport, why we need a commissioner, like a board or something, because it's like, yeah, Harbaugh's guilty, but it's like, you can't even do anything to him now. Except maybe put a show cause type of label on him for a probation. Like, if you want to hire him as a head coach, you got to show cause why he should be a head coach and be allowed. But it's like, at this point, it's like, he's gone. He's gone, and I'm pretty sure a few of the other coaches who were involved have moved on to other universities in different roles, so we don't know when, if their punishments are going to happen, because I did see that in the initial article that I read, that other coaches are going to be punished, but they're not putting their names out yet. So yeah, it was one of those weird things where it was sort of like, yeah, this took so long. We're sort of like, something like a few coaches still left at Michigan who could get punished, but they all served their suspensions last year. So it's like, nothing. It's almost like nothing really happened at this point.
Yeah, that one I think they, I mean, we always knew that was kind of the strategy Michigan was using there, is just like, just finish this season. They had, a lot of hope that obviously it would turn out the way it did, and then they'll deal with it at the end. You know, I wanted to just kind of toss out a couple of other small stories before I forget, and as we kind of get to the hour mark here. One of the portal stories of the day that kind of came out later, Shedeur Sanders, Deion Sanders' son, has decided to also help the recruiting trail for Colorado. He dropped an Instagram story that is literally defense. It's all caps. I mean, he writes not all of it, but the defense transfers DM me, offense transfers DM. And then he wrote his, obviously his handle at Shedeur Sanders. And then in small text in parentheses below, he wrote, "This is not last chance you." So I guess like father, like son, he's trying to help build the team up. I don't know what that means, but it's a very Colorado way of doing things, which, because that's now completely its own planet. You know, another transfer, one of the ones that isn't getting noticed, but I just feel bad for the team. It's New Mexico State. Obviously, they lost Diego Paiva to Vandy, which I'm not sure that quarterback race isn't entirely clear, because I don't believe he arrives until summer. But New Mexico State star running back, who was also named as Star, so Star Thomas, has also entered the transfer portal. We'll see where he goes from there, but it's kind of tough to be at New Mexico State. That's always been one of the toughest programs. They're going to have a big reset, because I think, again, Jerry Kill left. not entirely thrilled with the replacement. Sorry, the name just slipped my mind. Who was the guy who replaced him? It was the old UNLV coach. I'll look that up in a second. But again, we'll see where that goes. Maybe he kind of wasn't thrilled with what he was seeing in spring practice. Tony Sanchez, that's it. Tony Sanchez is going to be the head coach of New Mexico State this season. A couple of other things. I'm really looking forward to seeing who else jumps in this portal, I just have to say. And I just wanted to reemphasize, going back to the spring games, that I really do kind of hope we see a little bit more of the Ole Miss. By the one thing I also forgot to mention about Ole Miss, students over 21 were allowed to bring booze into the stadium. They were allowed to bring the booze in the stadium and then sit behind one of the end zones. I just can't believe like how long it's taken college programs to embrace the silliness of college, of, you know, hot dog eating contest, tug of war. Like, because the spring game, half the time, I mean, yeah, you get to see some of the young guys who you haven't had a chance to see, but I've always been fascinated by the draw that some of them have. And granted, it's usually free. It's great if you have like kids. You know, you're not paying a ton of money to go see something. If they don't like it, fine, just leave. Another spring game I did want to mention, though, is LSU's, only because, you know, Garrett Nussmeier, he looks good as quarterback number one. Obviously, he's got big shoes to fill. They've got some good transfers there. CJ Daniels from Liberty looked really good. Mississippi State, Xavier Thomas also looked pretty fine. They have, obviously, Kyron Lacy, who's there as well. But the thing was, the defense looked problematic. They still had some busted coverage. Obviously, Blake Baker, they paid a lot of money to get him from Mizzou. He's the highest paid coordinator right now in college football. It's going to be interesting to see how that works out. But hearing that their defense is looking weak, I am absolutely looking forward to their first game in Las Vegas. They're playing USC. It's going to be a game to see whose defense actually looks marginally better from last season. That game is shaping up to be that way. USC still hasn't played their spring game. I believe it's coming up. I think it might be this weekend, but we'll see. I know Texas A&M are also playing this weekend. There should be some interesting games there. Ski Master Murphy, you accidentally dropped and then rejoined. I wasn't sure if you wanted to add something.
Oh, no.
Okay, no problem. I'm trying to see. Let's see here. I think I have a few of the other spring games that are coming up. Oh, no, I deleted them. I had a list then. I'm probably going to have to talk about them tomorrow with my co-host on the College Football Survivor Show. You know, one of the other G5s to look out for, Boise State, Malachi Nelson, the quarterback who they were able to bring up there from USC. He's looking pretty good. Obviously, that was a big get. He was a five-star, looked really good at USC, but again, he was not. He had suffered some kind of injury from what I understand, so they decided to look another direction. And obviously they brought in UNLV's head permanent quarterback to back up. Well, to be in the battle, presumably back up Miller Moss. So the quarterback battle at Boise State looks like Malachi Nelson to be that person, although Maddox Madsen was able to show some good signs. They have another interesting kind of transfer. Chris Marshall was one of those superstars that came in that infamous Texas A&M recruiting class that was the best ever, and none of them really panned out. He, of course, left because of disciplinary issues at Texas A&M, went to Ole Miss for a hot second before he kind of left there, went to the JUCO. Now the former five-star is at Boise State. So they've got some talent there. You always have to consider them in contention. And the only reason I bring them up is, of course, there's going to be a G5 spot in this 12-team playoff, so they are one of the teams to look out for there. Speaking of which, I just want to reemphasize something because I was thinking of Utah, which also had their spring game. Cam Rising played. He wasn't allowed to be touched, but the good news for Utah fans is his arm looked pretty strong. It looks like he could still pass like he used to. They've got some good players there. Money Parks had a great touchdown catch. Dorian Singer, originally from Arizona, but last season was at USC, looked great in the spring game. Actually knew somebody who was at that spring game. And he was really impressed by that. They had a good battle for the backup quarterback. Looks like the person that stepped up there was Isaac Wilson, the freshman quarterback. The only reason I bring up Utah is, and it's going to be interesting, I think a lot of fans haven't paid attention to the 12-team playoff format in the sense that the top four teams, the top four seeded teams, are not based on ranking in the AP or ranking in the coaches poll. They're based on the top four conference champions. So that means a team like a Utah, a team like a Florida State or even an NC State or Louisville could end up being in the top four spots, because we're going to assume that those top four spots are going to go to the remaining P4 conferences. So obviously, it goes without saying, the SEC and Big Ten champs will be in there, most likely 1 and 2. But you might end up with a random team that you just don't think of, at least most college football fans don't necessarily think of, as a number four seed, which means, of course, to get that first round bye. But I think it's going to be interesting for teams fans to get used to that. It'll be something interesting to see some names that we don't think of all the time, especially if we get someone more unexpected. I mean, because let's be realistic with a Big 12, there's other plausible teams. I mean, it's Utah. You could get Oklahoma State is quite plausible. A couple of other teams in there that could get in there. And obviously, the ACC might even be a little more wide open, especially because Florida State is rebuilding a little bit. We'll see where Clemson is. Because we know how much they love the portal, so you know you're getting what you're getting with them. Ski Mask Murphy, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I just had a thought, Bobek. Like, with the 12-team playoff, and we're all expecting, like, yeah, it's going to be automatically 3 SEC teams, 3 Big Ten teams. But also because they're all going divisions, do you think there's a possibility that the SEC and Big Ten could cannibalize themselves with in-conference play and could functionally only have one team in per conference?
One team would be impossible. I can't even imagine that. Like, what would – I mean – because so many teams don't play each other, you know what I mean? What the worst case? Because I think the lack of divisions at least works in one way. If you get the top two teams, you're gonna avoid those years where Wisconsin would kind of lumber into the Big Ten championship. And the reason I bring it up is then you presumably have, at least in the SEC and the Big Ten, a runner up that's going to still look pretty good. And maybe a third place team. Maybe there's a benefit to be the third place team. If you have one loss and a close loss, let's say, to presumably one of the two teams in the title game. And then you get to go into the playoff and take on probably the G5 champ that made it in. You might have an easier way through and play equal amount of games than if you'd gone into the conference title game and won. Or you might actually have one less game than the team that goes into the conference title game and loses. So there's some interesting kind of thoughts there, because that's why with the 12-team model, there was a thought that over time, will it actually lessen the value of the actual conference title games? And let's be clear, I mean, some of them were added just for the money purposes. You know, not originally, you know, it used to just be a conference race who finished on top. Maybe it'd be a tie or something like
that. Yeah.
Exactly. Getting some feedback there.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I have the similar thought of you. Like, the 12-team playoff may devalue conference championships, because I'm just thinking from a Michigan versus Ohio State standpoint, if that if we both get to that game, both undefeated, it would be basically the team's best interest to just take that game off, lose it, and just have more time to rest all your starters before the playoff actually starts.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see here. Andrew, you came up here. I'd love to have your thoughts as I slowly get ready to wrap this up, but I know you've been super patient. I've seen you in the audience for a while.
Awesome. Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Just your thoughts on Marcus Freeman in Notre Dame. I think he went big this offseason getting Riley Leonard, and then Mike Denbrock as offensive coordinator. My question is, do you see them as a playoff team? And do you see Marcus Freeman getting that, you know, that first extension as a Notre Dame coach? Because he hasn't gotten an extension yet in his first 2 years. So just would love to hear your thoughts on that.
That's a great question. You know, Riley Leonard was a great grad. The only concern is, of course, his any issues he might have. I know... obviously, the injury bug has been something that people have been concerned about. It's like him, Cam Rising. There's a couple of quarterbacks there where you're like, they're great, but man, do I want to pay attention to who's potentially backing him up. But that said, Marcus Freeman's built a good team. I was a little skeptical about the way he was hired, because especially with Notre Dame, I was like, man, that's not as splashy a hire as I was expecting. I wasn't expecting like Jerry Faust, but I was like, you know, like it just didn't quite feel where I thought they were going to go. And then so far, so good. I think we can certainly say Sam Hartman just didn't work out quite the way they had thought. The hope that he had by going to Notre Dame and stepping it up and proving that, wow, look, now I'm at a bigger program, look how great I am, didn't quite go as well as it could have gone. But I don't think that was Marcus Freeman's fault or the program's fault. I think sometimes you just get a player who might hit the roof of where they can go. And sometimes you see that. Kentucky really had a bad spate there. I mean, you know, Brock Vandegrift didn't quite. I mean, he looks like he could work out, but I mean, they had Will Levis, didn't quite work out. They had Devin Leary, they didn't quite work out the way they had hoped. So now they're hoping Brock Vandegrift, who looked pretty good, you know, in their spring game, will be that guy. So I can see why Notre Dame might be a little concerned that might happen. But I think overall, the talent there has been great. The build of that program has been great. I think Notre Dame this season, I think almost every season at this point, should be always shooting for the playoff. I mean, they're independent. So I loved when people were like, oh, Notre Dame can't be. I mean, you probably remember this. Oh, Notre Dame can't be a number. The top four seeds, like, who cares? You know, like, Notre Dame's because they don't play a conference title game, they're already going to play one less game than those four teams. So, or the same number, I should say. So the bye isn't going to it's going to be a wash. They're going to play the exact number of games as the teams that play in conference title games. And then theoretically, they might get to start with a weak program, because they would be, you know, if Notre Dame loses one game or goes undefeated, they'd be presumably the five seed. And again, get a potentially weak opponent in that first round, which is great for Notre Dame. But I think Notre Dame, certainly at this point, with the talent they've been able to build up, with the coaching, Dan Brock was a great get. And some of these just up and down across the board, I would expect them to compete for the playoff year in and year out. I think with Notre Dame, you could reach a point, and this is going to hit a couple of teams eventually. This has been a theoretical assumption, because, you know, I don't know if people are just trying to come up with potential tensions in programs or what, but let's say it's a Penn State situation where they keep getting to the playoff now and then they just lose in the first round year after year. I think everyone's saying if the team ends up in that kind of cycle for the first couple of years, people are going to just still be, the fans are going to be on board, like, wow, we made the playoff. See, we're totally legit. But then proceeding through the playoff will start to be a bigger demand. Like, how far can you get in the playoff? Can you make the semis? Can you make the final? Can you win the whole thing? I think Notre Dame, just being the expectations there are at the program, they would be one of those programs that could eventually, I think, kind of end up in that position. I don't know, Andrew, what do you think?
Well, I guess my big thing is I really want to be supportive of Marcus Freeman. And I agree with you. I was surprised that they hired Freeman. It was sort of a groundswell of like the players and social media online really pulling for him. So it was cool at the time, but I agree with you that first-time head coaches have not been very successful at Notre Dame. So I think Freeman has sort of navigated well, although he's underperformed in his first 2 years. My concern for him is this. I don't know if you've analyzed their schedule at all. I'm not saying it's the easiest schedule in the world, but it's certainly not a tough schedule. And there's a lot of Notre Dame haters out there for Brian Kelly. But Brian Kelly with a schedule like this would go 11-1 or 12-0, especially toward the end of his tenure. So my thought on Marcus Freeman is, if you can't make the playoff at this schedule, when are you going to make the playoff? And so that's why I asked the question on the extension is like, do you, if you're Notre Dame and you go 10-2 and miss the playoff, do you give this guy an extension or not? So it's sort of a tough call. So.
Yeah, that's a great point, because just for those who don't know Notre Dame's schedule, it is easy for Notre Dame. And I have to be that, if you know Notre Dame, you know they always have historically had some of the toughest schedules. The most interesting one is that first opener, at least unusual, and that's at Texas A&M. That's gonna be an interesting benchmark for both of those programs. I would assume Notre Dame would have some slight edge, at least in Vegas, but I'd be curious to see where that is, only because they're obviously a new head coach. A lot of promise for Elko, but you know, who knows what's going to happen there. But then NIU, you know, it is what it is. At Purdue, okay, we'll see where that goes. I'm not really worried about the Boilermakers there. Miami of Ohio, Louisville, who knows? Louisville could be one of the tougher teams next season. Stanford, it's a rival, but Stanford is, I'm going to let Troy Taylor prove that he's got something there before I make an assumption. Same with Georgia Tech, Navy, wonderful rivalry, wonderful history, but it's a one-sided rivalry. Florida State, who knows? They're rebuilding, so this is a great time to have the Seminoles in a lot of ways. With all the losses they had from last season's excellent squad, Virginia, probably weak. Army, wow, that'll be... Oh, that's the Shamrock Series game. So that's going to be Yankee Stadium. That'll just be fun for the location. And then at USC, which... Who knows what USC is going to look like? We'll get a quick idea of that. But by the end of the season, especially, sometimes they start strong and look weak under Lincoln Riley. So we'll see where that goes.
But like, don't you think when you see that schedule, it's like, I know online there's a lot of haters about Brian Kelly, but wouldn't you say Brian Kelly, regardless of what the results would be in the playoffs, he goes 11-1 with that schedule, no? And so, like,
yeah, he was very good at getting through the games he needed to. He was a pain in the butt as a USC fan. I'm just going to say that because, like, every time you think, like, oh, this is going to be the year where, you know, oh, this is going to be USC's turn to be the underdog that pulls off. It's like, nope. he had a habit of absolutely winning those regular season games very well. So, yeah, I agree. It'll be interesting to see how Marcus Freeman goes through this, but I do agree, at least for Notre Dame, this is weaker than usual for them. I'm very interested to see how this goes. And, you know, Steve Angeli is a good quarterback. That's who I was trying to remember, because obviously Friday Leonard, because I know he had a second surgery on that ankle injury. He's a good enough player to step up and step in. And he did have a good start in the Sun Bowl for the Irish. Of course, bowl games are almost as hard to gauge a team as the spring game is, but we'll see how that goes. You know, I'm going to slowly start wrapping this up, but I see your hand up, Ski Mask. Do you want to add something before we wrap this sucker up?
Yeah, because I was just looking at the Notre Dame schedule as well. I was going to say, you know, Texas A&M is going to let you know immediately whether or not Notre Dame is going to be in the playoff or competing for it. But I also noticed something else, because the amount of games listed beside the teams that said rivalry is basically half the schedule, which led me to look at how many rivalries does Notre Dame have.
It has a lot.
Why do they have 17 different rivals? Like, you can't...
Because everyone wishes they could beat Notre Dame.
Like, if Notre Dame was, like, actually winning championships, you just have to call them, like, the Thanos of college football, because nobody likes them.
Oh, man, I love that. Yeah, and again, I just want to also mention, I do have, there is in our larger team that runs RCFB, there is a FIU fan, and he was crushed that Chris Mitchell left FIU to be a wide receiver at Notre Dame. So they're going to get some other weapons there, too. I just wanted to point that out, because they got, like, Bo Collins from Clemson. They got some other guys that are coming in. It'll be really interesting to see how this all comes together when that offense gets on the field against A&M. But I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. It's been going on for a little more than an hour. It's always fun listening to all of you talking college football on Tuesday nights. We do these every Tuesday night, almost every Tuesday night. There might be one or two that I'll run into a conflict. But at 10 p.m. Eastern, once this is over, this automatically turns into a recording. If you missed the beginning, I will make sure to also upload this to wherever you get your podcasts. This is RCFB Talk. This is RCFB Talk 189. My name is Bob Akairi. It's always great talking to you. I hope all of you have a great rest of your week. Let's see how the portal turns out. Let's see if anything interesting happens at the spring game. Let's see if anyone can top Ole Miss's spring game. I'm not sure this season, but I'm hopeful next season. Some teams decide to do some wacky things, like having a hot dog eating contest or a slam dunk contest. I would love to see some American Gladiators style stuff, like the old school show, the one I grew up with in the 80s and 90s. Like, get the guys with the Puget sticks, like, give it to the players, put them on pedestals, have them trying to knock each other down. Please give them helmets so we don't give someone a concussion at the spring game. That might not be good, but I think it would be fun. Like, let's entertain the fans. Let's make it really silly. Let's make it really fun. If you're not going to have a game that really tells us a whole lot about the team, because it's college, it's fun. That's what it's all about. And I'm glad to see the sport embracing that. But anyways, hope you all have a great night. Now I'm going to hang up and listen.